Just when you thought Representative Bishop couldn't disappoint anymore, he's broken your heart. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Finally, Palin speaks. The presidential election is saved. I'm Representative McKay on the right.
My colleague, Jason Perry, named director of Hinckley Institute of Politics. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. But first, this news. Good morning. I am Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I am so pleased to have in the studio from the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the political right, introduce yourself, my friend.
Good morning, Representative Dan McKay on the right.
Well, I want to talk politics right at the top here because we have a lot happening, and we finally, it looks like we've got someone who's going to challenge Governor Herbert in a big way from the Democratic Party, Mike Weinholz.
Yes.
He has not confirmed it, but it's reported in the media. Dan, what was your reaction to that news?
I thought you were going to ask Jim what he knows.
He says he's known for months.
I will call it right now, 32%. That's what the general
That's
election
That's what the governor's going to get?
That's what the general election Democratic nominee will receive in November.
Wow.
32. And that's because they will work hard and get 2% more than usual.
That will be a landslide then for Governor Herbert. Jim, what would you add here? Give us what you know about Mike Weinholz. You don't have to confirm whether he's in or not, but I know him as a business leader and have interacted with him in several settings, and he is a great guy.
Michael Weinholz is quiet. You know, he's not a loudmouth.
He's a great dresser.
He came to Utah, and I'm not confirming anything. I don't know if he's going to run or if he's not going to run. I mean, I don't. I wouldn't say.
You can neither confirm nor deny.
I can neither confirm nor deny. But here's Michael's story. Came to Utah about 20 years ago with a small, teeny-weeny company and has systematically, over 20 years, built one of the greatest companies in America. Fortune magazine has 4 years in a row named him as one of the 100 best corporations to work for, and that's based on employee input and feedback. His pay for his employees is double what it is for comparable companies doing the same kind of work. He has run from very small to now somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 employees who, again, are making very, very good money. He's moved his company. There's reports out, published reports, that say the company was sold. He sold the company for over $1 billion, and that was 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm sure he had investors and others, so it wasn't as though he put that in his pocket. But here's a man who is also on the board of the United Way and on the chamber.
He sounds like he's describing a Republican this whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all business.
And I'm just wondering if the show had turned into a campaign ad, which I'm fine.
Let the voters of Utah pick who ought to be running this $14 billion a year business. The real estate agent and government employee, Gary Herbert, or this man who has done everything the Republicans say they want done, and
that's
he's actually done it.
Because if you look at Governor Herbert, he's been governor for how many years? Is it seven now? I don't know. I don't know how you count.
It seems like 70.
I think it's coming up on seven.
Okay.
Because he left.
Then he was lieutenant governor for 5 years.
Yeah.
Then he was a county commissioner for many, many years. Mm-hmm. So here's the government guy.
Yeah.
And this Mike Weinholz, it sounds like, is the business guy.
Okay.
I don't know.
After that description, I change my prognostication. And I'll say 36%.
By the way, see if this changes.
It's good.
My guess, my prediction is Gary Herbert's going to have 5 more governor's gala balls with all of those guys writing checks. Because Michael could clearly, if he chose to, and if he decided to run, he could clearly write a $5 million check and say, you know what, let's get things kicked off here. And get that message out that he's not this partisan whatever. He's about running businesses and creating not $10 an hour jobs, but serious jobs.
Yeah. Yes. But you are dealing with a presidential year in Utah. And if the Donald is the presidential candidate for the Republican Party, I'm going to alter my prognostication and go to 38%.
We've gone from, what, 34 to 32 to 38. All I can say is that I'm just thrilled that there is some, you know, a marketplace of ideas that's going to be talked about. And if Mr. Weinholz challenges the thinking in this state and puts us in a situation where we have great discussions, that's good.
There came a time with the United Way where they were raising money for preschool, and they came up with a system. And the way I understand it, Mr. Weinholz was moved and heavily involved in the policy part of it, and contributed $1 million in for Utah education. His passion, his belief, his whole life is about education. And we've got a cowering whole Republican establishment on the other end of it that simply refuses to face up to the facts. So it'll be an interesting debate.
It'll be more fun.
Dan, you mentioned the Donald. We got news this week that Sarah Palin has come out and endorsed Donald Trump.
Is she still a thing?
Well, a thought occurred to me that didn't bring a single vote. I am just so certain that all of the Sarah Palin people were already in Trump's camp.
Well, yeah, because you got to think about the constituency, right? It's the lack of clear thinking individuals who probably are going to support, you know, the loudest candidate as opposed to the most qualified. So you're right. Maybe all of her people are there. But I wasn't as discouraged by that as, you know, I wasn't really as moved by that as I was the speech that she gave in favor of
Donald. Even
the
sound of her voice was hard.
Yeah, I really wish that they had sent Tina Fey from Saturday Night Live.
At least she would have been.
To come and take her place. Yeah, good job. You held yourself there. To take her place and maybe make a more, you know, don't you know type of speech that, you know, we'd expect from Sarah Palin. It was just, I don't know. I'm grateful that she's still involved, as everyone should be, but I don't think Donald gets anything out of that vote. In fact, it may actually be bad for him, because she hasn't been great since she wasn't elected as the vice president.
Right.
Last night, I was at my VCR, whatever you call those things now. And I turned on ABC World News, and there, on a real live network at 5:30, breaking news. This is the lead story. This is a breathless anchor with perfect television hair anchoring the news, saying, breaking news, Sarah Palin will endorse Donald Trump. Let's go live, as the lead story on the national news. And I thought,
that's a sad statement.
Where have we gone wrong,
statement.
America?
It's a slow cycle. They're looking for something.
You know, but the way I've analyzed this, and we don't have a lot of time left in this segment, but the way I've analyzed this is the American public is angry, and they're tired of the discord, and they're tired of the dysfunction, and they're expressing their anger by supporting these angry candidates.
They are.
Interesting.
You know, long ago, I felt this roiling in the electorate, and that's why Herbert might go down.
Yeah, well, could be interesting. One last thing just to mention, real close to home in the capital city here, you've got Mayor Biskupski and continuing to get her team pulled together. We saw that DJ Baxter, the person in charge of the RDA for Salt Lake City, has moved on to a different job there. That's a big change. I'm very concerned about the Salt Lake City International Airport, and I do not want to see a change there. I wondered where you guys came down there. Maureen Riley is the director of the airport. They're in the middle of a rebuild. I think that would be a big problem for Salt Lake City to make a change there.
I do what you say here.
This is, I'm on the airport board, so
yeah, I know. It's,
you know,
and
so
that's why
I experience that every month.
I call my friend Natalie and say, how should I feel about this? And I support you.
Maureen has such a great knowledge about the FAA and being a hub airport and Delta, and a great background financially. She's trained in finance and accounting. I just can't see why we'd make a change there.
Is she going to save the golf course?
Now that one's a bit trickier.
Now you're
a bit
speaking
trickier,
to
but
me.
But we're talking about an airport.
With a golf course.
Could she get Dan and I into the Delta Crown Room? I mean, we're not going there. Look, I hope that the mayor understands that that you don't just plug anybody in there.
Yeah.
I think she does.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we're going to do a legislative preview.
This is Jim DeBacchus, proudly on the left.
This is Dan McKay, proudly next to Jim on the left.
I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I am where real problems get solved. The best ideas from both the right and the left.
Because Jim and I are causing them, is what she's... Jim, that's what she's saying, is we're causing the problems and she's fixing
You guys sit there and throw bombs at each other, and I sit in the middle and busily try and make the state better.
I like it.
She's got a point, doesn't she, Dan?
It's actually pretty fun, though.
It is time for the Utah Legislature. Monday, January 25th, you guys will be called into session. I want you to just take a second and describe what this is like. I mean, you are part-time legislators. You get a paycheck, but it's small. You only meet for 45 days a year for this session. I realize that you have interim days throughout the year, but it's a citizen legislature. Yeah. That's what we mean by part-time. You're not full-time at this. You take doctors and lawyers and real estate brokers and art collectors and all sorts of people and put them in a body and in some sense it's just like your neighbor serving up on the hill.
So I spent some time in a classroom this last week with some Utah government students in my district.
What grade level?
It was grade 12.
Okay.
Love and it. So I asked them, I said, so how much do you think a legislator makes?
Oh, yeah.
And it was fun because, you know, they had a range. And so I was able to ask them, what do you think the range is? And the range they gave me was between $60,000 and $150,000. That was the range of what the legislators make. And until we give Jim a pay cut, I think we've got – Jim, aren't you – you know, it's somewhere between $12,000 and $13,000 a year. You get – and that's –
I think that would surprise people. I think they probably think that it's more money than that.
Well, I brought that up at a constituent meeting, and they said, boy, are you overpaid?
See, that can really backfire on you.
Yeah, you bring that up.
Well, these high school kids were like, we did the math on time and all the other things that it takes. You know, I kind of backed into, here's what it is. And I said, you know, so what does that mean I make after we outlined a bunch of, you know, scenarios? And they said, it's like a dollar an hour.
I know,
Remember that from Napoleon Dynamite?
Yeah.
It's like a dollar an hour.
Yeah. Mm.
So they were like, you know, which led to a healthy conversation with them, which is, why would somebody do it?
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really interesting. You know, we got to, they offered all kinds of different things. Is it the prestige? Is it some of those things? And, you know, some people, it's those different things.
So, Jim, why do you do it?
Yeah.
Why do you do it?
Well, I happen to be one of the rare ones that does it for the money. And but by paying what we pay, we actually, I think, lose out on a lot of people. That is, no school teacher can afford to be a legislator. You have a common working people that cannot take 45 days off from their job. And I don't mean to disparage the people that are doing it, but it is a citizenry, but in a way, a self-selected citizenry.
Well, do you think
and
it's
people
the pay?
In certain industries that can take 2 months off and go up and be in the legislature.
So why don't we have
we
more
got real
women
estate
up there?
People.
You know?
Well, is it the okay, so
and
real
developers
quick,
so
let me ask about I'll ask about Jim's question. Jim, do you think it's the pay or do you think it's the fact that it's a 6 week dedicated session? You've got to quit your job basically mm-hmm. for the 7 weeks that we're up there on the Hill. You've basically got to quit your job to do this. Is that what is it the money or is it that element? Because I would argue it is so much more difficult to get the time off of work than it is the amount of money. The money, you know, you can go both ways, mm-hmm. I think.
Time is the issue.
It's the time. If you go to other states, and I do this every once in a while, and I look at how their sessions function, they meet for 45 days a year mm-hmm. or maybe a little bit longer, but they do it 2 days at a time. So they'll spend into June on their legislative session, but because it's 2 days at a time, they're able to, you know, go back and mm-hmm. do their regular jobs for at least 3 of those days. And, you know, there's some argument that they get different people as opposed to the concerns you have, which are us greedy real estate people.
We get, and it, you know, it's just the nature of real estate and developers, and we have a lot. It's overwhelmingly weighted that way, but it is, it's because they drink a lot. Oh, no, you're just rubbing your eye. I thought you were making that. They drink. So it just is the nature that of people that have this, their own schedule and control of it, that they're, and I think we suffer as a result.
So it is what it is, but you guys go up there. What sets the tone for the session? I mean, what is it that gets you off to a good start or a bad start?
We both look at each other because you never know.
Is that right?
I think it's so unpredictable what issue is going to send things forward or sideways during the Hill, and we'll end up spending an inordinate amount of time talking about
it. You
have
ceremonial thing, don't you, where the Speaker of the House addresses the body?
Yeah.
And sets, in this case, Greg Hughes, his expectations.
And Greg does it from a lectern and, you know, speaks to the body and those kinds of things.
You get the same thing over in the Senate.
But President Niederhauser does it from his chair, and he's talking, you know.
And, you know, Wayne is so low-key and so down to earth. There's just is not a pompous bone in his body.
None of this sounds very strategic to me. It just sounds kind of like it just happens.
I wish I could say that it was more strategic than it is.
In my mind, the legislature is way too, and I suppose they have to be because somebody has to be, but they have very little eye on the very big overarching issues and very much so on specific little details.
I want to do this for... laws. I want to do this for my local park.
And it leads me into my most important bill of the session, which is to bring back the Constitution, the divinely inspired state Constitution, the way that it was pre-1996, where 100% of that K-12 money went to our state income tax went to K-12. And we did something that they said was temporary, and we got some highways to pay for, and we're going to change this. And it has devastated. It has ransacked K-12. There is an accompanying bill which would make whole higher ed, and I just met with Commissioner Bueller this afternoon, and that would make sure that not only are they not damaged, but that they come out of the deal better. But that's the kind of thing I'm talking about where – we're not high-fiving on this $5 million issue or this $2 million. Or last year, after 20 years, we actually increased taxes to pay for education, $78 million. But it barely paid for growth in K-12. So I wish that the legislature could be – Dan and I are on a committee that's taken a look at – dedicated sales taxes.
Earmarks.
And we're hoping to get rid of that. That's a big – issue, but the legislature is just terrible at that kind of thing, and it's frustrating. And I guess with 105 of us, you look to the executive to handle it. And frankly, because we're always grading everybody, I get a D minus on that vision issue to the chief executive of the state.
Well, okay, but so many things to add to that.
I thought it was interesting that he took on earmarks, but he talked about one of the largest earmarks out there in terms of the income taxes going to education. But
I just thought
there was an irony there.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, yeah, that was one of the issues that actually was addressed was, and it was funny because the lobbyist group for Voices for Children, which is, you know, a nonprofit, completely altruistic about increasing funding in our schools. They're a great group. But they were there making the same argument that we need to do away with all these earmarks. And then, you know, someone had the audacity to point out, I think it was Senator Bramble who said, you know, the largest earmark we have in the state is actually for education. Would you be in favor of getting rid of that also? And watching them backpedal from that was interesting.
One is a constitutional issue.
The other
is legislative.
And that's important.
That's fair. But I think, you know. Jim, I just want you to know I'm with you. I think we do need to get rid of the higher ed dent in the K-12 education, regime. I think from a policy perspective, and this may not be great for Natalie. She works for one of our fine postgraduate and graduate institutions, but I think that it's come time really to reevaluate how we're doing things. And you know, as affordability for homes for our educators is dissipating in this state, we've got to do something to change it.
Jim, if I were in your shoes trying to do something that's really big, that's really going to change things, I would take care of the sales tax problem this state has. Notion that the sales tax is a diminishing base. That would actually
explain to people what that means.
Well,
and what's
where the economy is growing is in services, whether it's healthcare services, legal services, professional services. I mean, programming, computer programming. These are all services. We don't tax them. What we do tax are goods, and they're becoming a smaller and smaller share of our economy.
57% of the growth in sales tax is earmarked. So it goes to specific
then
things,
you have
and that's
remote
a serious
sales,
issue.
Internet sales, right. And you have all these things that make it so that we don't have – we need to modernize our tax system. Then you're actually tying the tax system to the economy rather than just arguing over how it's divided up. I don't know. That would be a thought.
Okay.
What are the other big issues? Just kind of rapid fire. What are you guys seeing?
Medicaid expansion. I don't think it's going anywhere. I don't think Greg's body has changed their mind, and I suspect virtually nothing is going to happen. We're talking now about the Zion Curtain. I'd say it's 50-50, depending on...
To get rid of it or keep it?
Well, 50-50. So,
Zion's Curtain, what do you got? It'll all depend on you guys. Can you get the votes in your Senate body?
Talking about the Senate, yeah.
Yeah, can you get the votes in your Senate body to do it? Because if not, the House has already voted to do away with the Zion's Curtain many years ago.
This is, I think...
Over and over and over again.
You know, it isn't very often, it isn't very many issues, but the talks now that are going on with the LDS Church, and I'm hopeful and I'm a bit optimistic, and maybe we can put that behind us and there'll be some give and take. If that happens, I think we might see the abolition of it.
Jim, who are the big players on Capitol Hill? And I ask that of you as the minority party, where you can just say, well, these are the people that are the big players. I was in front of a group where Governor Herbert, someone asked who his biggest political rivals were. And it was so funny because they were all Republican.
Who did he say?
Well, this is me. They just asked my opinion. But I said, you know, Jonathan Johnson. And then I said, you know, Speaker Hughes, the Speaker of the House, always has a little tension with the governor. That's not a Herbert Hughes thing. That's just always there.
So the question is, who would you want most on your side if you had a bill and you want to get it passed kind of thing?
That's a good one.
You know, it used to be John Valentine. I always liked having John. He not only was the smartest guy in the room, but he kind of knew it. And he also was the best guy on the rules. He knew exactly what buttons to push.
But if you're talking about the Zion's Curtain, he was always the guy that kept the iron fist on that Zion's Curtain.
Yeah.
So anyways, I mean.
Lyle Hilliard, you know, he's
Senator
got
Bramble?
This pulse on. Yes, you know, Bramble, you want him on your side. And if I've got something that has a notion of controversy, Kurt, let me talk to you about this, because he stands up and he really likes kind of going after you and enjoys the tussle of it. So in the Senate, and, you know, of course, Wayne, the president of the Senate, and somebody that I'd love to have on my side is Ralph Okerlund. Quiet, rural,
great
smart.
Representative.
Everybody just
loves him.
Leadership
oriented.
Yeah, just a terrific guy. Stuart Adams is – I'm going to get into trouble here, but –
it's good.
You've named Republicans. I think that's a very good way of stating things, Jim.
Yeah.
You
that's
need
fair.
Them on your side.
Yes,
so that might lead to your
Karen
to somebody's
Maine.
Gripe at the table, but we need to go to gripes. And I don't know, Jim, what you're thinking on gripes, but
we're gripes already?
We are at gripes, and maybe you can gripe that you don't have any more powerful Democrats up on Capitol Hill. I don't know.
My gripe is we waited 3 years and millions of dollars for Rob Bishop to unveil his thing, and it was not
public lands makes it on the show again.
It was not Lincoln-esque. It was Bundy-esque. What a terrible, tragic waste. Bishop took the political route instead of the diplomatic route. It is a terrible proposal. It's not going anywhere. President Obama signed those Antiquities Acts.
Dan, what is your gripe today?
I'm so discouraged. I keep thinking we're going to get him. You know, he's going to come around. I keep thinking we might meet some. Anyway, I would say my gripe is that the session is coming on fast and furious. I started my morning this morning at 4 with meetings.
Yeah. So, and the session hasn't started.
Who's going to meet you at 4 o'clock in the morning?
And
he's exercising first and things.
And
I don't
so,
know.
Yeah, I just said I it's started. I didn't say you've got, I didn't say that's, you know, I said I started. And because that's what time you got to be up to get, you know, all the meetings in, to get your work done. I honestly think this
he's
is just
a renaissance
as busy
man,
as the rest.
Jim.
I got up at 11 and I think.
You know, my gripe, and I don't know how to do this because I don't want to get into the somber discussion at the end of our show about the tragedy that happened on Sunday with the police officer shooting. But I am so mad about drugs in our society.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking to myself, it's not drugs. It's before the drugs. There's something before the drugs that isn't working. Something about our economy, our society, is not putting people in a situation to succeed. Yeah. And therefore, these bad behaviors are showing their self.
So well spoken.
As an economist, that's you would expect economic positions to be the only thing driving human
behavior. I'm always interested
behavior.
In gainful employment. I'm always interested in gainful employment for people. So that they have purpose. Well, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I hope you've enjoyed the program. I've been joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.